Coming to you from the bottom of Lake Agassiz. Welcome to the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the Mighty 790 KFGO. I'm your host, Doug Lear. I am a outreach biologist for the North Dakota Game and Fish Department and have a background as a game warden. Started my career as a game warden for the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. And back in the spring of 2000, when I became an outreach biologist for the North Dakota Game and Fish Department, had a conversation with Jack Sunday. And he deemed it beneficial to spend some time discussing outdoors topics, issues, news, and information with the biologists, the fisheries managers, the wildlife managers, the game wardens, to give the hunters and anglers, and even the citizens, even if you don't hunt or fish, a little different vantage point of the outdoors in North Dakota. And that's what we do on the weekend edition of Outdoors Live, is take a little different look at the outdoors, specifically of North Dakota, but oftentimes the same concepts and some of the same information can be relative to other parts as well. We bring you a Minnesota Outdoors Report with CJ Johnson, a North Dakota Central Outdoors Report with Pat Stockdale, and this week we're joined by a special guest. Randy Kreil is the Chief of the Wildlife Division for the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. Randy, you and I both know, and I've heard you say it on with Mike McFeely and Joel Heitkamp and every place as well, that you can talk about the weather in North Dakota, you can talk about the high school sports team, whatever the season might be, and you can talk about deer anytime, anywhere, any place, and you're likely to strike up a conversation. And deer numbers in North Dakota go through peaks and valleys. And not too long ago, we were at a peak. The conversation just 5 years ago, maybe less than that, we're at a peak, and the shift, well, I'll let you explain it, Randy. As you are the Chief of the Wildlife Division for the North Dakota Game and Fish Department, Randy Kreil.
Number of licenses since 1983, we're at 59,500, and we did fall a long ways in a very short amount of time. Remember, we were riding a record high population of deer for a number of years in the mid to late 2000s. And we were hearing loud and clear from the public, including landowners and farmers and ranchers and the motoring public and even some deer hunters, that we had too many deer. Less than 5 years ago, I sat right here and talked about the pressure we were getting to issue doe licenses for $5.
Right. Some.
There was a lot of pressure on the department to reduce deer numbers. And we were very aggressive in our management approach. We issued a lot of licenses trying to reduce deer numbers. And on the heels of that aggressive stretch of years where we issued all those licenses, 140,000 plus, came three bad winters back to back to back. Now, in hindsight, if we would have known we were going to have those three bad winters, we would have been more conservative on our deer license allocation the previous five winters. And so... Anyway, the bottom line was is that we were coming off record high deer numbers with a lot of pressure on the department to manage the deer herd at a more balanced level. And then we had those three winters back to back to back with a lot of adult mortality during the winter and then very low fawn reproductive success the next year. And it was the perfect storm, as you were saying. And beginning in 2011, we started cutting licenses, actually 2010, started cutting licenses very dramatically, and especially so the last 2 years, 2012 and 2013.
Randy, deer are a resilient wildlife species. They can repopulate rather well, but the fact of where we're at right now also indicates how significant the loss of habitat has been.
It does. Deer are very resilient, and all you need to do is look back at difficult winters. The winter of 96 and 97, there were some bad winters scattered throughout there, but the habitat base was there that deer and other wildlife bounced back. But the current situation in North Dakota with the incredible habitat loss that we're experiencing, whether it's loss of cattail wetlands, tree rows and shelter belts, native prairie being converted into marginal cropland, and 2 million acres of CRP being lost. All that adds up to a very serious threat to the potential future for wildlife populations. And then you throw in the joker in the deck of what bad winters we might get, and the ability to get the deer herd back to the level that meets the needs of everybody who's interested in hunting is going to be a challenge for everybody.
Randy Kreil is the Chief of the Wildlife Division for the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. The series of meetings was held a couple of weeks ago. The backside of February, I was at the meeting in Castleton on President's Day, February 17th. That stuff is history, but your opportunity to weigh in on the meetings remains. And there's a lot of information on the Game and Fish Department website that you can look at, digest, and respond to. But as Randy mentioned, wrapping up this segment, we'll keep Randy around here and talk a little bit more about the goal of the process. But as Randy mentioned, there's changes in terms of what we have for deer on the landscape compared to last year, compared to 10 years ago, compared to 20 years ago. And you can't just have a meeting and grow deer. It doesn't work that way. We have more interest in archery hunting than we've ever had. Over the course of the time frame of the 2000s, when we had what were referred to at that time as concurrent season tags, where you could use an extra doe tag in the muzzleloader season with a black powder in the archery season. It had to be used in that unit. It wasn't like it was just a statewide concurrent doe tag that you could use anywhere. They were specific to units. The management was still there, but that availability grew interest. And as the deer population was brought back down towards the management goals, the interest remains. And you could put that in maybe in the perspective of like bison football. And bison football interest has been growing with the winning seasons. Now the expectations of winning another national championship are there. But over the course of time, you're going to possibly be into a situation where the expectations can't be met, but the interest is still going to be there. If your favorite restaurant has the best pizza in town and they close down, there's still going to be interest in that pizza. People are still going to want that. They're still going to have a yearning for it, similar to deer season. So we've seen deer hunters, when the rifle tags have been reduced, look at options such as archery tags. That's kind of maybe a couple of different ways that you can look at where this process is all-encompassing. And Randy Kreil, the chief of the Wildlife Division, is with us when we return on the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the Mighty 790 KFGO. And welcome back to the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the Mighty 790 KFGO. I'm your host, Doug Lear. Randy Kreil is the chief of the Wildlife Division for the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. And we're talking about the special deer management meetings, which took place the last couple of weeks, wrapped up with a meeting in Jamestown, a meeting in Bismarck, live streamed the one in Bismarck. First time Game and Fish has done something like that. And without very little advanced notice, there was still, from what I heard, 600 people logged on. Standing room only in Jamestown and standing room only in Castleton goes to show the interest that there is in the future of deer. The comments are being accepted until March 17th. So you still have some time to let Game and Fish let us know what you think or feel. The information is available on the Game and Fish Department website as well for you to watch, read, listen. And Randy, going into it, we did not have a predetermined notion as to what Game and Fish wanted to do, right?
The department has not made a decision on which way to go or what to do with this situation. And what we're presenting at these meetings is the comments that we've heard from people. And we'll give some insight into some of the suggestions that people have made and why they may or may not work, and what some of the pros and cons are of other suggestions that people have made. Now, that doesn't mean that the suggestions that we put out there, that we've heard from the public, that we put out there at these meetings, that we've heard from the public, are the only ones we're going to consider. Not at all. We hope to people will be thinking and have observations and comments and ideas and suggestions. And we're very interested in what they have to say. That's why we're doing this special round of meetings.
Randy Kreil, Chief of the Wildlife Division for the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. Randy, let's be upfront now, because this is not something that just came on the scene in a matter of the last couple of months. Yourself, Terry Steinwad, the director, Jeb Williams, Assistant Wildlife Division Chief, along with a lot of the other big game staff and biologists, have been looking at different topics and issues over the course of time. That's just what wildlife management is about: assessing where we're at, where we've been, what could be changing into the future. So from your perspective, from the professional viewpoint of the Wildlife Division Chief, what are some areas that you and your staff have identified?
Well, some of those potential solutions are going to be included in the presentation that we give. Okay. And like I said, we haven't selected one. We don't have a preferred alternative, because many of the suggestions or ideas that we've come up with have actually come from the public in terms of how you would more fairly distribute license and deer hunting opportunities.
When you talk amongst people, there's a different viewpoint of what's popular and what's unpopular, and whether you're a bow hunter or a muzzleloader hunter, a rifle hunter, or you hunt all three of them.
Well, unpopular is a relative term. If you're one of the people last year to get any license, a change would probably be popular. If you're one of the people who got more than one buck license last year, or more than one deer license last year, then a change may be unpopular. But the question is how do we fairly distribute the deer hunting opportunities that are out there in times when we have a limited number of licenses available? And that's what this is all about. And so popular is a relative term. Some people may like what they hear in terms of these alternatives and comments that the public and that we put out there. Other people may not like them. It depends on who they are.
Sure.
If you're a muzzleloader hunter, or if you're a bow hunter, if you're a gun hunter, if you like to hunt with all three, your opinion may vary. But what's important is that people set aside what's good for me, mm-hmm. and think about what's good for the future of deer hunting. And don't look at a muzzleloader hunter or a gun hunter or a bow hunter as a competitor. Look at them as a member of an organization, a community of deer hunters that we all have a vested interest in the same result, a good population that provides ample hunting opportunity. And so it's really important that people look at what's good for the future of deer hunting.
All things considered, Randy, when you look at the future of deer in terms of the deer herd, deer hunting in terms of opportunity, what are some variables that you would like to see come into play as maybe a best case scenario type situation?
The best case scenario would be a continued conservative management approach when it comes to harvest, coupled with a series of nice winters and good reproductive success by the deer, and a turnaround in the trend we're seeing in habitat loss in this state. If we do not see a turnaround in habitat loss in this state, increasing the deer herd or the pheasant population or maintaining our waterfowl populations are going to be a very difficult task indeed.
That's a great point to wrap up on. Randy Kreil is the Wildlife Chief for the North Dakota Game and Fish Department, because these meetings were specific to deer because there's such an interest in deer populations in North Dakota, and deer hunting arguably the most popular hunting season that we have. I say arguably because you could make an argument for pheasant hunting in terms of popularity over the last 15 years, since probably 2000, when pheasant numbers started to grow across North Dakota. And when you can go out and still, to this day, find a rooster in Cass County, it's possible to find pheasants in Cass County and go pheasant hunting in Cass County. Things have grown since the days of finding a pheasant in Lemoore County and shooting it and taking your picture with your dad and one of your dad's friends. And that interest in pheasant hunting and in deer hunting and duck and goose hunting, as Randy mentioned, the loss of habitat as associated with deer hunting has drawn a lot of attention in terms of pheasant population and the loss of CRP. but also understand that the future of duck reproduction, the future of pheasant hunting, is going to be connected with the loss of CRP as well. It's no mistake. It's not just a simple matter of ironic that as CRP came, pheasant numbers began to increase in Richland, Sargent, Cass, Lemoore, Barnes, Stutsman counties. And it's also a direct correlation that as CRP losses compound and tumble, the upland game population, the pheasant population in what would be considered traditional fringe areas has been suffering. The pheasant numbers have shrunk. You put that on top of generations of hunters that, like myself, I can remember growing up without CRP and how tickled we were to find a couple of roosters near Verona. But I'm 42 years old, and I would venture to say there's a lot of hunters between the ages of 18 and 35, that 17 years, that just always expected to have pheasants in Colfax and huntable numbers of pheasants in Fingal. And there's still pheasants around, but not at the numbers. And part of that is the winters that we've had. A lot of it in terms of upland game is the loss of CRP. Let's shift gears and get a fishing report, an outdoors report, as we transition from the meetings and the topics of the future to the here and now. Pat Stockdale will be joining us with a Central Dakota Outdoors report. CJ Johnson still to come. All ready for you on the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the Mighty 790 KFGO. And welcome back to the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the Mighty 790 KFGO. I'm your host, Doug Lear. Still to come on the weekend edition of Outdoors Live, we'll be bringing you the updates from Minnesota with CJ Johnson with a Minnesota Outdoors report. Things slowed down in Minnesota with their game fish, their walleye fishing closing, but panfish season continues on in Minnesota. It was kind of interesting because it goes back to the 21 years ago when North Dakota moved away from having a closed season, a fishing season that closed. I'm not even sure what the date was. If it closed like March 31st and then reopened up usually like the weekend after Minnesota's opener or the weekend before. It didn't land on the same weekend of Minnesota. They were typically separate. But CJ Johnson will be bringing us a Minnesota Outdoors report. And here in just a couple of moments, we're going to connect with Pat Stockdale with a Central Dakota Outdoors report. A couple other news and notes that have been popping on the scene in the last week. The latest statistics are out on the moose, elk, and bighorn sheep harvests from last year in North Dakota, the season tally. Understand, if you're new to the program, that North Dakota does have a huntable population of moose, elk, and bighorn sheep. We call it a limited hunting season because we honestly know that we'll never ever have a population of moose, elk, and bighorn sheep to provide everybody an opportunity to get a chance. But everybody can put in, residents of North Dakota can put their name in the hat. That's one thing I've heard continually throughout my years is that residents realize the odds of drawing a moose, elk, or bighorn sheep tag in North Dakota are relatively slim, but they love the mystery and the suspense. Probably the suspense is a better way to put it, of you never know. You never know if you might get drawn and be one of the lucky ones. It's a once-in-a-lifetime tag if you are drawn. And if you look through some of the past application numbers and units, you can see that you might have a little better odds in this unit drawing a cow elk tag. If you've shot a bull elk in Colorado and in Wyoming and you just like to say that you've hunted elk in North Dakota, that might be an option for you to improve your odds and your success of getting drawn. When it comes to bighorn sheep, we had 4 tags last year in North Dakota. Fill rate was 100%, and that's not a surprise for anyone. the bighorn. I can't remember the last time we had an unfilled bighorn sheep tag. I'm not saying that it's a guarantee, but the guys and the gals that draw a bighorn sheep license, if you put your name in the hat for any of these, understand the amount of time and resources you'll have to invest just to go hunting. Being able to take off the time, being able to make trips scouting. If you're from Fargo or Wahpeton, you realize that you're not going to be bighorn sheep hunting in Harwood or Argusville. That just doesn't work that way. So you have to be willing to travel out to the Badlands to go bighorn sheep hunting. And likewise, for moose and for elk, having the resources. If you've got a 79 dart and you're going moose hunting, you need to probably have friends that have 3/4-ton trucks or some other means of helping you out. That's just kind of what goes into it. When we look through the success rates of last year, I told you 4 bighorn sheep tags and 4 filled. Moose, there were 111 moose licenses last year. 101 animals were taken. That, my friends, is a 91% success rate. 85 bulls and 16 cows and calves. You see a reduced pressure on cows and calves to allow the population to maintain, maybe grow just a little bit. So very successful moose hunting. Elk licenses, 271 elk tags issued for the fall seasons of 2013. And 255 hunters took the field. That's an important number to remember because maybe somebody broke a leg or maybe somebody ended up with a sickness in the family, was unable to go hunting. 255 hunters harvested 127 elk. There were 77 bulls and 50 cows taken. The success rate from units ranged from 44% in unit E1 to 60% in unit E3. I go back to the fact that elk hunting in North Dakota is not a guarantee. Elk hunting in North Dakota is not like deer hunting, in that people have an expectation that they'll get a shot at an elk. That's not the case. I've got a neighbor that can attest to it. Probably 20 years ago, was drawn for an elk tag and had friends and family out there helping him and just didn't get a shot at an elk. So there's no guarantees just because you draw the tag that you're going to be successful. That's why they call it hunting, my friends. Let's hunt up Pat Stockdale with a Central Dakota Outdoors report. You read her work in the Minnesota Outdoor News, Dakota Country Magazine, and she is a very well-respected outdoors communicator and connects with bait shops, anglers, outfitters to find out what's going on outdoors in North Dakota this week. Pat.
Welcome to the Central Dakota Outdoors Report, a look at fishing and outdoor activities throughout eastern North Dakota and the Missouri River system. With warmer weather, hopefully more anglers will take to area lakes. Over on Devil's Lake, they will likely find scattered perch success, move around, punch several holes, and locate active schools in 25 to 50 feet. The key is being able and willing to move around if they're biting or if they're not biting. Look for fair to good walleye success in 8 to 20 feet. Try Graham's Island, the mouth of Six Mile Bay, Doc Hagen's, East Bay, or Stromy's Addition for both perch and walleye. And if you're looking for pike, try the shallows. Lake Irvin is fair to good as well, but there access is more difficult. Jamestown Reservoir has scattered activity, but anglers aren't heading out much to Pipestem Reservoir or Lake Ashtabula. Look for improving walleye and perch success on Spiritwood Lake, though. Try working deeper water first to find perch on small area lakes across the southeast, and then move shallower if needed. Try buckshot rattling spoons tipped with minnow heads, waxworms, or perch eyes, but, just as in Devil's Lake, be sure to move around. Try late evening hours and 10 feet for walleye using jigging spoons tipped with minnow heads. Minnows beneath bobbers might also work. The cold weather limited activity with scattered success at best for those venturing out on the small east central lakes. When it comes to area rivers, it's best to stay off of the Cheyenne, Red, and James rivers with upstream reservoir drawdowns. Lake Traverse drawdowns are also creating poor ice in the Wahpeton-Breckenridge areas. Farther west, the Missouri River is still quiet, but anglers venturing onto Lake Sakakawea and Lake Audubon are still finding some walleye success. There is still some pike activity around Wolf Creek on Sakakawea's east end, but it slowed a bit on the north side. Don't forget that permanent ice houses have to be off North Dakota lakes by March 15th, even though auger extensions are still in high demand. But anglers can use ice houses, their permanent ones. They just need to be removed daily.
Always enjoy the report from Pat Stockdale. Look forward to it each and every week, only here on the Mighty 790 KFGO. Up next, the Outdoors Report from Minnesota. CJ Johnson joins us on the Mighty 790 KFGO. Welcome back to the last shot for this weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the Mighty 790 KFGO. I'm your host, Doug Lear. I should mention that if you missed earlier parts of the program with Randy Kreil, the chief of the Wildlife Division, you can catch the podcasts of this program and many others. Thank you to our good friend Bob Harris. As the executive producer of the weekend edition of Outdoors Live, Bob gets the podcasts up for us. I put the blog up. Bob put the podcasts up. What a great team that we make. I'll tell you the honest truth. When the weekend edition of Outdoors Live began in the fall of 2000, tapping on the door of 14 complete years, Bob Harris was a big part of helping me get comfortable in the studio and on the air. And even to this day, Bob provides some great technical assistance for this program. So deeply, deeply thankful to our help that Bob Harris does provide us. Some good news in the fight against zebra mussels. If you missed it this week, Daniel Malloy is a biologist with the New York State Museum in Albany, New York. And when the zebra mussel problem began to blow up in the United States, in the Great Lakes in the 1980s, and has been moving closer to the center of North America, that's where they start. They started in Europe, shifted into the Great Lakes, down through the Mississippi system, up into the Red River system. We've had zebra mussel villagers in there. And that's what researchers and biologists do. They see and hear of a problem, and they start working towards a solution. And research being done at Lake Carlos, which is just north of Alexandria, with a chemical called Zequinox, seems to be showing promise in battling zebra mussels. Here's the big thing, is you could nuke zebra mussels, so to speak, but if you kill everything else around it, what have you gained? Do you kill all the walleye, pike, and aquatic vegetation just for the sake of killing zebra mussels? Or you search for something that would target zebra mussels. That's what this Zequinox does. And in Lake Carlos in Minnesota, shows a 90% kill. And you need 90%, if not better, to help reduce and control zebra mussels. But in a series of headlines that have dominated due to negative with zebra mussels and simply just the spread and the cost and the battles and the fights, this is definitely good news here. It's not like we're going to be dumping this around come June 1st. We got a long way to go, but we are finding a little bit of good news. And now it's time to get a outdoors update. I've never been very good with my grammar, and I'm sure my 8th grade English teacher in Lemoore, Miss Nelson, would probably correct me. I'm not sure if we're going to get an outdoors update or if we're going to grab a outdoors update. Either way, CJ Johnson is a Lisbon, North Dakota native, and he spent his career covering the outdoors of Minnesota. So he knows the places in North Dakota. He knows the people and the places in Minnesota. And we're fortunate enough that each week, CJ Johnson kind of puts that together with a little outdoors update from the Minnesota side as we work our way towards the mid part of March. Things are kind of in maybe a lull phase. Well, let's let CJ tell us what's going on in Minnesota. CJ, thanks for joining us, my friend.
Hey, Doug, my pleasure. Anytime. And I understand the grammar thing. In Lisbon, I thought the sixth grade was the best 4 years of my education.
Do they still call the sixth grade the senior year in Lisbon?
For me, it was, because after I got through with 4 years in the sixth grade, they said, pass him on because it's best for all of us.
Congratulations, CJ.
Yeah, well, looking around the state today, as you were were mentioning earlier, Doug, the fishing has gotten a little bit light. It's the tween season for the winter fishing, if you will. Up in the Brainerd-Nisswa area, the Nisswa Guide League up there reports there are drifts to deal with on most of the lakes in the Brainerd Lakes area. But if you work the Highway 371 Bay on North Long Lake for crappies during low light periods, you'll find them down about 16 feet. That's relatively easy to get to off the highway there. Now, you can look for sunfish on Nisswa Lake, Cullen, and Upper Gull Lake, and North Long as well. They're down about 6 to 10 feet over there. And the north end of Gull Lake is worth noting for perch, and they're down about 16 feet right now. Ben's Bait and Tackle in the Grand Rapids area, they say that snowmobile is really the only travel option on most of the lakes, with more snow piling up last week along with the wind. The only three lakes with some limited vehicle traffic right now have been Bowstring, Big Split Ham, and Little Split Ham, and all three are providing some crappie activity during the low light period, but they're down about 20 to 24 feet. Johnson's Port side on the east side of Lake Mille Lacs. Travel has become more difficult there as well, and fishing pressure has been somewhat limited because of that. Most fishing opportunities are limited to bays such as Cove and Walk-On for perch and panfish, but those bites also have been kind of slow right now. Curry's Boat Harbor on the west side of Mille Lacs. They say the roads are open in St. Albans Bay, but traveling anywhere beyond that is almost impossible unless you have a snowmobile. And a few people who use snowmobiles are finding they have some slush as well to deal with, so know where you are going. Alexandria area, Christofferson's Bait and Tackle says you can look for suspended crappies in about 11 feet on Lake Mary at night, and at Reno Lake in about 20 feet of water, even deeper there. Crappies and sunfish continue to hit in 7 to 15 feet of water on Maple Lake and in 8 to 12 feet in Christofferson's Bay on Lake Ida. Lake Ida, by the way, is a well-producing lake. Otter Tail Lakes County Fishing says that, according to Minnesota law, of course, and all the permanent fish houses are off right now in that area, but there always seems to be this period of inactivity on all of the lakes, the tween season, of course. That doesn't mean you can't fish. Bring your auger and a few poles, and if you have a locator, bring it, because panfish this time of the year sit elevated in the water column, and you can mark them really nicely if you have a flash or a locator. And as mentioned last week, you'll need an auger extension yet for a couple of weeks, but if you do that and you use some tip-ups, just lighten it up again, put a small, crappie minnow on it, you'll probably have pretty good luck. Becca Hart over in the DL area says they still have plenty of ice and decent travel on most of the fishing spots in the DL area. Panfish, of course, the action right now. Crappies are still suspended over deep basins. Some sunfish are off some deep breaks, but most catches are coming in 9 to 12 feet of water, and they're in the weeds or just above them this time of year. But you know, Doug, when you're fishing, it's really kind of a relaxing thing, especially if you just kind of look around, take it all in.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always something to observe. And I remember one day I was on the water and noticed a fisherman from the city. They're kind of obvious.
Okay.
Out fishing on a lake in a small boat near where I was anchored. And that guy noticed yet another older dude in a small boat as the old guy opened up his tackle box and he took out a mirror.
Mm-hmm.
Well, quite obviously the curious city dude, he rode over and said, "Hey, what's the mirror for?" Well, said the old codger, "That's my secret way to fish. I just shine the mirror on top of the water."
Okay.
Pretty soon the fish noticed that spot of sun on the water just above it. They swim to the surface. I reach down, net them, put them in the boat. Well, the city guy laughed, and then he said, "Does that really work?" And the old angler looked really seriously at the out-of-towner. He said, "What's your bottom dollar it does, buddy?" Well, the city man said, "Well, tell you what. Would you be interested in selling that mirror? I will give you $30 for it."
Wow.
Yeah, well, the old guy, just after a pause, literally scratched his four-day-old beard, and almost reluctantly, he said, "Okay." You know, that guy sat there in my boat totally mesmerized by what was happening in front of me and really just as curious to see how the heck it was going to play out.
Right.
Well, sir, after the money was transferred, city fisherman said, "By the way, how many fish have you caught with this device?" Well, the old guy calmly started up a small outboard on his boat and looked at the city slicker and said, "Well, you're the sixth one today." Remember, fishing's always great. It's a catch you got to work on.
Because we know the sucker season never closes, does it, CJ?
Oh, no, that's open all the time. You see them every... Oh, I'm sorry.
Great stuff, great stuff. CJ Johnson with a look at the Minnesota Outdoors. A little bit of humor as well. He's a regular feature on the weekend edition of Outdoors Live. We appreciate your insight, your humor as well. Thanks so much, CJ.
Anytime, Doug.
And we always appreciate CJ Johnson with his insight and assessment of the outdoors in Minnesota. That's going to wrap things up for this weekend edition of Outdoors Live. A big thank you, as I mentioned before, goes out to Bob Harris, the executive producer of the weekend edition of Outdoors Live. Podcast available at kfjoe.com. Email me, outdoorslive@gmail.com, and find the blog at kfgo.com as well. We'll be right back with you Monday morning at 6:20 with an Outdoors Live update. Until then, I'm Doug Lear reminding you, as always, keep your lines tight and your powder dry. Have a great one out there.